In the name of God, the beneficent, the merciful, I bear witness that he is one. And as a student of truth, you should know that in the Arabic language, we call him Allah. But that simply is a word that bespeaks the language of those that reveal scripture. So we thank him for Moses and the Torah, and we thank him for Jesus and the gospel, and we thank him for Muhammad and the Holy Quran, and may the peace and blessings of the one God be upon all of his worthy servants. We can never thank him enough for allowing us this great blessing to stand for justice. It is on behalf of the Honorable Mr. Louis Farrakhan and on behalf of all of us that desire justice that I greet you with the greeting words of peace. We say it in the Arabic language, As-salamu alaykum. How's everyone this afternoon? Can we give our pastor, the Reverend Gordon, a hand? Of course, we are here in obedient following to the call for justice. It is a call that has been made for many years. And it is a call that has been denied for many people over many years. And so we are certainly thankful to have responded to that call. You have often heard us recite from the book of Isaiah that justice stands afar off and equity cannot enter because truth has fallen to the street. I'd like to add another one, if Pastor would permit me, as we would recite now from Proverbs, the 21st chapter, that when justice is done, it brings joy to the righteous, but terror to the evildoers. So we come because we want joy. There's a scripture that says, I counted joy, in that we are now a people that have been searching for, hoping for, and longing for justice for so very long. And the case of the unfortunate and untimely murder of our brother, Oscar Grant III, is one of many where our people have endured injustice. Many years ago, when the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. began traveling outside of his hometown in order to secure civil rights for the people, there were those that opposed his coming, I believe, in Mississippi. Yeah. And they wanted to know, what are you doing here? Why are you coming here causing trouble, some would say, among our Negroes? Why are you making this kind of trouble, and this is not your hometown? And Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. responded to them by saying that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so for all that read scripture, that we hope for the time that justice would rain down like many waters, well, we are to stand whenever obvious injustice occurs. And so this afternoon, we'd like to bring you news, warning, guidance, and the need for mobilization as we are looking at a time and place that requires all of these things. A few days ago, Johannes Mezenbe sat in court for another formal hearing in the charges being brought against him by the state of California. And when you picked up the paper, if you did, or you watched the television news, and you were seeking information about where this case is going now, what is happening, is the system working? And when you turned on the news, you probably saw something that you have been seeing over the airwaves for the last few weeks, and that is that Michael Reins, the attorney for Johannes Mezenbe and many other police officers, is arguing in the public venue that he wants this trial moved out of Alameda County. Now, interestingly enough, when we arrived at this hearing, this was a normal day for arraignment of cases. And they said to us that there may have been 40 to 60 cases coming in on this day for men and women accused of crimes to plead guilty or not guilty and move on to the next case. It's generally a pretty expeditious process. In fact, we watched about four or five cases walk past us in about 10 minutes. I was worried over what my schedule would be on that day because, as Pastor said, we've committed ourselves to whatever time and sacrifice is necessary to ensure that justice is done in the murder of Oscar Grant. So if it meant 1 hour, or if it meant 10 hours, if it means 1 year, or it means 10 years, if we're true to the cause of justice, we will stand right there with the family of Brother Oscar and for the people in the state of California. Well, I sat there and watched. And every case that came before the judge was passed through in a minute or two until they got to Johannes Mezo. I'm thankful that the judge, Jacobson, I believe is his name, or Jacobs, that's handling this part of the trial, moved other cases around to accommodate the fact that this room, which was much larger than the room of Judge Clay, we actually could fit into the room for the most part. My sister, you were there? Where on many occasions in Judge Clay's courtroom, it being smaller, many of us were locked out, unable to bear witness with our eyes and with our ears of what is happening in the courtroom. And this is important, that we're able to see what happens. Because what you read in the Tribune is 90% lie, 10% true. What you see in the Chronicle is 90% lie, 10% true. Now, the papers may say, well, we didn't lie. Well, it was a lie of omission. Meaning, we didn't actually report what happened in the courtroom. As you know, when Anthony Peroni used racial epithets and derogatory terms and hurled them in the face of Brother Oscar 1 minute before he was killed, that you never read in the paper. You never read in the paper exactly what Mr. Peroni said 1 minute before Oscar was murdered. In other words, the press was there, but the press didn't cover anything. Their minds were made up before they came into the courtroom.
That's right.
And as it was on that day, so it has been on every day of the trial. At best, they may get a sentence or two from Brother Bobby or from Sister Wanda or from the attorney on the way out the door, but the happenings in the courtroom generally go uncovered.
Yeah, right.
Now, let me show you how this court proceeding started. Brother, can you hand me a newspaper? This is what goes unsaid. Some of us think, sir, you have this paper, don't you, sir? You all should know that on page 4 of this paper is a headline story that says, Lies in the Face of Videotape. Community leaders accuse officers of lying in the Oscar Grant shooting case. But in any event, the proceedings started after some fundamental dialogue with Mr. Raines. That's the attorney for Johannes Mezo. Have you read the papers? You're in it.
No, Your Honor.
Oh. I understand from the papers that you want a change of venue motion. Are you going to make that motion today?
No, Your Honor. I need
time to get the facts together to make them look. According to what I read in the paper, you want a change of venue. Have you read the article, Mr. Rams?
No, Your Honor.
Mr. Rams, come up here.
Now, yes, now. Come up here now. He's the judge talking to a multi-million dollar attorney. Come up here now and read this article. It's kind of lengthy, Your Honor. Read it. He stopped everything. Made him read it. He goes back and says, now, Mr. Raines, were those quotes accurate? Well, I suppose so, Your Honor. Now, what the judge didn't do was just bust him out altogether and said to him at the first hearing, a gag order was issued against the attorneys and the witnesses about what they can and cannot do in the media. He didn't bust him out publicly. He just was very subtle about it and said, in words, I want to say to the attorneys, be careful how you handle the press. But what he could have said is what we all know, is that the attorney for Johannes Mezeli is seeking to move public opinion so that when they seek to make a venue change motion, they will have to go out into the public and do a polling and find out from members of the public whether or not they can serve fairly on a jury and whether or not they are predisposed to opinions that they feel cannot be changed by the facts. So they go out allegedly randomly and ask questions of potential voters over whether or not they can serve fairly on a jury. Well, I wonder how random it will be. If they go in on San Pablo in 32nd or 27th and ask, do you think that Mezeli is guilty? Well, I think on San Pablo in 27, we're going to say guilty. Or they may seed the question. They get to make up questions. But ideas like, did you hear that the judge said that the police officers were lying? Do you think that the police can get a fair trial in Alameda County? Well, if they take the question anywhere near Napa, which is the home of Johannes Mezeli and his family, I wonder what kind of answers they expect to receive. So the attorney Raines has been playing games from the beginning because he knows that he has no case. So in a few weeks, I don't have the calendar in front of me. In August, there'll be, no, not September. In August, there'll be before judges accusing the judges of misconduct because the judges stopped the police officers from lying on the stand. Like any good judge would do. You don't go before a formal proceeding and proceed to tell multiple lies and expect that you'll not be challenged on these multiple lies. Look at these beautiful young people. Is your family?
Good to see you, brother.
Good to see you, too.
And these are they who are most threatened by the injustice that we come to address. So we are certainly honored to have our young people here with us for community education. Now, as we were in that trial, two judges, not one, said to the defense that what you're saying doesn't make sense. Now, one would think after the first time the judge said it, they would have gone back to the drawing board to redraw their lives. But they didn't. They came back to court in front of another judge and represented the lies they presented the first time, which was that Mr. Mezeli thought he was pulling his taser, which we all know there's a gross difference between a taser and a gun. So we don't have to figure that out. That's a no-brainer. Now, what came into evidence in the preliminary hearing
more than in the first phase was the aggressiveness and the willingness to lie by law enforcement officers over what actually happened. Because they circled up the wagons. And it's a shame that a sheriff wears a star on their chest. Do you know what the star represents for their badges? The star is a symbol of justice. The more points that are on that star, the greater authority has the one that's wearing it. So when you see a sheriff with a star on their chest, that's symbolic for justice. Well, if the officers of the law are justice keepers, then it ought not to matter who violates the law. Because the symbol of justice is a woman that is blindfolded with scales in her hands. Why a woman? Well, sisters, you have more compassion than most of us. That's true. How many mothers have seen father about to discipline your child, and your child was probably wrong about something? And when father went for belt, paddle, or whatever, how many mothers have ever looked at the father, and even if you didn't say it, you were thinking it? You did not have to be that harsh. Does that happen? It happens. Some mothers will jump on the father's back. Stop! The child was wrong, but he wasn't that wrong, right? So the point that I'm raising here is that the symbol of justice is a woman, because a woman is naturally more long-suffering. She went through 9 months of carrying a child. And when the child came into the world, she stayed up late at night. She heard every whimper. She had to elbow him. Get up and help. Can't you get the wipes or something? Right? It's a natural compassion. So the symbol of justice is a woman, which represents natural compassion. She's blindfolded. So that it ought not to matter, as the Bible says, and Pastor can help me, you're neither Jew, Gentile, bond or free, male or female, all are one in the Master of Justice called Christ, right? So now, this woman is blindfolded, meaning racism will not affect justice. Classism will not affect justice. Gender perspectives will not affect justice. Justice is justice.
Right. Right.
So if we find in a courtroom the judge who's weighing out the matters, that's where the scales are concerned. Mm-hmm. Where sin is on one side of the scale, and a feather is on the other side of the scale. Mm-hmm. This is the gentle balance of life. And if justice is to be served, it takes a person with the right kind of heart, the right kind of spirit, the right kind of soul, the right kind of faith, the right kind of character. So you be very careful about who sits in the seat of judge. You know how the scripture says, judge not lest you be judged? The problem that we run into is that on the street, when we are confronted by law enforcement officers, more often than not, they are not simply making an arrest, they are making a judgment on the street. These young men must have had a fight. They're young, they're black, they must be threatened. They're young, they're Latino, they appear to be a gang. In fact, they even wrote crafty new laws that we're challenging Sacramento on as we speak, called gang injunctions. They laid one out here in Oakland with Operation Nutcracker, which launched our town hall meeting, in which young men in the Acorn, West Oakland area were called by the Attorney General terrorists. And they were given the title Notorious Gang. Well, now what that meant, that
when they are arrested and charges are brought against them, that there are new enhancements, so that no matter what it is they are accused for, they find themselves facing more and more and more time in jail. Well, now, who is it that said that they're a gang member? We found out. We asked it. Well, who said they're in a gang? Well, the police officer did. With what evidence? No evidence. All I know is that they were supposedly had on black that night. Didn't Oscar have on red? He had on black? But they said they were looking for black men in black.
It's common.
It's very common. This is Raider town. Right? A whole lot of folk wearing black in Raider Nation. Is that true? We can't afford the tickets to go every week, but we in Raider Nation. Right? Hey, you feel like I'm a part. You can go out when they're barbecuing, drive by, honk the horn. Go home and catch it on cable. But now, my point here is that when this officer of the law takes on the role of judge, jury, and executioner, then the results become, with craftily written laws such as gang injunction, which says to the officer, I now can provide the evidence that they are a gang. Do you know what you need to be called a gang? You need to wear the same clothes, similar clothes. Last I checked, fashions do that. I mean, I don't know why in the world some of our young people would have their pants sagging. But it's become fashionable. Okay, well, I accept it. It's the fashion. I don't accept it. Don't try. Don't try. He knows I go get an extension cord. No, not the whipping. We had them in school, and one young man came to school without his belt, and he was sagging a little bit. So I went to the storage closet and found an old beat-up extension cord. I told him, okay, I cut it. Okay, now tie this up. This is your belt for today. For young people. But now, in law enforcement eyes, these sagging pants represent gang. Now, OPD just fired an officer. Praise God. It looks like they never fire officers no matter what they do. OPD just fired an officer. Why? Because he not only shot and killed one person, he shot and killed two. One, Jody Woodfox. The other, Andrew Moffitt. And in both cases, neither of those young men were armed. They were not dangerous. They were young black men. Well, what did he allege in both their cases? He said they were reaching around their waistband. I said to someone earlier, my hands are always near my waistband. If they're not up in the air in surrender, my hands are near my waistband. Now, your pants are sagging, and they're really by your waistband, right? So now, I've seen young people, you know, we got great gifts. Some of us run pretty fast. But if your pants are too loose, you can't run. You got to grab your pants. And then you lose your stride because your arms aren't working. Then even old Meserly can catch you. The turning reins can catch you. Because you're holding your pants up on the run. If nothing else, you tighten up your belt so you can use your hands if you need them.
Amen.
Another story, I'm sorry. But this judge on the street is what Oscar and his friends ran into that night. And the evidence of that is that Anthony Peroni, who instigated the entire conflict, testified that if Oscar had not been killed or shot, that they would have not even taken down their names. In other words, this would have been another young brother who got cussed out by the police. He'd have been another young brother and his friends that got body slammed by the police. He'd have been another group of young men that got hammered by the police. They did all that.
It's common.
And would not have taken a name, written a report, none of that, because all that produces a trail from internal affairs.
Right.
So now, at Oakland, officers at Hector Jimenez, who is responsible for murdering two people. Now, he's not under trial, unfortunately. But finally, and I say finally, because this never happens, an officer at least lost his job. Had you heard that Bart had considered in dealing with Mr. Woodfinden, one of the officers on the platform that night that testified, and Ms. Dominici, an officer who tested lied. I don't know if Woodfinden lied. I didn't hear him. But didn't he testify that he didn't know if what he heard was a gunshot? Okay, he lied too. Woodfinden lied. Dominici lied. And before they murdered Oscar, they took a little test. You know, a written exam of some kind, they have that in employment centers for advancement. And they evidently scored well enough on that test for some kind of promotion.
Wow.
Now, can you imagine they're in court testifying? I should say, testifying. They came in court and testified, or as Anthony Peroni said, I'm only trying to justify what you see on the video. I mean, explain. That's why the judge said that they were lying. You've got three police officers who none testified I heard a gunshot.
Wow.
Ms. Dominici said, well, I don't know if I heard a gunshot, but I smelled. You mean your senses were sharp enough to smell gunpowder, but your ears weren't sharp enough to testify? And Ms. Dominici testified that it was hours before she realized who was shot, and somebody was shot 10 feet from her person. Now, unless you're sitting in Vietnam or something, my brother sat in Vietnam, and you heard a lot of shots, and you probably didn't have to look around a lot because you knew them shots was firing. You kind of knew where the enemy sometimes was, right? But now you're on a BART platform. One shot. You're 10 feet away. This officer testified she didn't know who was shot. How could she not know who was shot when everybody stood over Oscar looking at him, pointing at him, concerned about him? But Ms. Dominici, she was more concerned, she said, with this crowd control situation, that she didn't even turn around to see had anyone been harmed. But she did turn around because she said, I looked in the faces of the other officers and none of them seemed alarmed. Well, stop right there. What happened to, oh my God, oh my God. I thought he had a gun. I thought I was pulling my taser. What happened to all that testimony? She said, I heard, they all said, I heard a loud sound. None of them heard a gun. Then, in order, evidently, to not be a witness of what happened, she didn't turn around and see who was shot. I had a beef with some police one day. Well, I didn't have a beef with them. They had a beef with me. And they wanted to fight with me inside of a hospital at Killer King Hospital in Los Angeles. And when they approached me, I saw the anger on their face. I hadn't done anything. I was there to check on a patient. There were three white ones and one black one.
The white ones were threatening me. And I looked at the black officer and said to him, are you with them in this? He said, just listen to them. And then the brother left. He left me with these three wild police officers. And I'm thinking, oh boy, listen, I know what this is. He doesn't want to be a witness of what he thinks that they're about to do to me. So if Miss Dominici doesn't know who shot, it's because she doesn't want to be a witness of what she knows just happened. That on the BART platform, you had officers who took to themselves the duty of being judge, jury, and executioner. It was their intention that night that they were going to teach these young urban males a lesson. And they didn't know that Mesley would take it to the stage that he took it. I'm sure they didn't know that. Mesley knew that. Which is what the judge said in his judgment. Nobody knows the state of mind of Johannes Mesley but Johannes Mesley. But the problem we're having here now is all of these officers that lied in testimony, why do they still have a job? Why are they working? What more evidence does BART need to know that his officers have perjured themselves or withheld information that BART itself needs in order to render justice? They've got a private firm, BART hired, to take over internal affairs. Well, you know, next week, Monday and Tuesday, I believe, BART is hosting a public meeting with this organization of black law enforcement executives that was paid $125,000 to assess BART from top to bottom, their policing practices. Well, the things that BART told us to this point really have not made sense. They say they had 9 investigators over what happened that night. Well, first, when we started this process of developing oversight, they said in a report that BART only received 12 complaints in 2008 from the public about its police force. They were asking about models for oversight and comparing BART with San Jose, Sacramento, Richmond, San Francisco, and Berkeley. And they are correct in saying that San Francisco has, I think, 2,000 police. And these other metropolises have much larger police forces than BART. However, that being said, if they've got a much larger police force than BART and you receive 12 complaints that require internal affairs, then it seemed like they will have resolved every one of them 12 complaints because you only need one person to handle 12 problems. Now, I told them that you had to have been given more than 12 complaints because we have received in this meeting more than 12 complaints. So now, the point here being that this oversight process and the work of NOBLE, the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, is said to examine BART from top to bottom. And so on Monday in San Francisco, I don't have the address in front of me. The Mission Cultural Center. You have the time? 24th in Mission at 6:30. We're going to call our family in San Francisco to meet us at 24th in Mission. As NOBLE is alleged to have studied the function and workings of BART police. Well, first, why does BART have internal affairs if it doesn't conduct any internal affair investigation? Now that they've got a case to solve that is yet to be solved, they hired an external agency, Myers Nobbett, to conduct its investigation. And while I respect this black-owned company or black executives in the company, we respect them and we hope they do a wonderful job. But I don't know, Sister Wanda, have they talked to you? They have. Diana, have they talked to you?
No, I requested for some information from them for the family. They did not respond.
I haven't talked to you? Brother Bobby? I think Jack is out of town, but his son's on the platform. And
they haven't spoken to him.
They haven't spoken
to
them?
No.
Well, where is the internal investigation? Does it only interview the police officers and get their side of the story and does not interview the victims? What kind of an internal affairs investigation is Myers Nobbett doing? They've been at it for 2 months and they were scheduled to have concluded the investigation right around now. Now, if they've not spoken to the young men that survived that night, the lynch mob mentality of Bart police, then what kind of investigative report are they going to give? So, when you have your public hearing, yes, we will need to assess how Bart functions, because it doesn't make much sense at all. We've had a very good, you got good-hearted officers there. They, brothers, they come to every one of these meetings. And every time I tell them that somebody else has complained about treatment by BART police, brother tells me, well, here's my card. Well, brother, I'm not on the BART train with the victim when it happened. I appreciate your call. And I respect that I or we can now call you. But if I'm not personally a victim, then I can't help that victim. So it doesn't suffice that you passed out a few business cards at the town hall meeting. We appreciate it, but that's PR. And if Myers Nobbett has not interviewed anybody of who was a victim that night, then that's PR. In fact, I get emails from Bart every day. They're on a PR blitz. Now, as we're talking, while they're PRing, Bart is now falling into deep economic trouble. They are now confronted by what they're saying to be a $100 million deficit. Well, you know, we're in church, Pastor. Isn't that how Pharaoh was broken? He lost his wealth. That was one of the plagues against Pharaoh. It's recorded in the Holy Quran that Moses made a prayer. Yes. He had a hard time getting his own people to believe. I know it's hard to believe that, but you know, every prophet fought with the people. And working to get them to believe. So in the Holy Quran, Moses actually makes a prayer. He cannot get the children of Israel to respect the law in a way and the call to separate from Pharaoh. So Moses prays. He's saying to Pharaoh, let my people go. But the people are going to go where? We don't want to go nowhere. We got a job here with Pharaoh. We get some food. We get some, government cheese. If we get shot, we can go to Highland Hospital and see us. After we fill out the papers, of course. You all with me now? So folk with the righteous servants didn't want to leave. They were comfortable, confident in what was feeding them. So Moses makes a prayer in the Holy Quran that God would frustrate the wealth of Pharaoh so that his own people would believe. So when you look up, Bart seemed to be okay a few months ago, but now they've had this problem more than a few months. Now all of a sudden, Bart is faced with a $100 million problem. I think justice is being served another way around. So Myers Nobbett,
I'm anxious to see what they come up with. Noble. We're anxious to see what they come up with. But let's be clear. Until a system is in place that ensures that what happened to Oscar and his friends that night will never happen again. And all that's PR. We want to change the way that policing is done with bark and truth all over the state. So that these officers that walk the grounds like they're gods for the people. That's the problem they had with Oscar and his friends. They acted as though they were the Lord. Sit down. Excuse me? Sit on the ground. Why? There's a bench right here. And it escalated into cussing, foul language, and threats to their physical persons, and then they were forced to the ground. But for what? They have in law enforcement something known as a felony prone position. Well, that suggests that there is a potential felony that I'm investigating. And that in order to protect my life as a law enforcement officer, that I've got to position the bodies of these suspects in a way that I am not threatened. Well, these officers were never threatened. The officers themselves were the threat. In fact, Anthony Peroni testified that Oscar Grant posed no threat to the Bark police that night. But of course, he also said Oscar tried to kill him. Think of how much he lied. He didn't say he posed no threat until he was humiliated by the videotape. And when he attempted to testify that Oscar was kicking him, kicked him twice, and the attorney, district attorney's office, a prosecutor, that shows on the tape, when Oscar's feet never left the ground, he knew and said, well, I'm going to have to make up something else to justify what you just saw on the video. So then for the first time, he said, see, he was reaching for my gun. So I don't know what Noble's going to do. One thing I hope Noble does is implement a policy for lying police officers. That should be immediate policy. That if you lie on a report involving use of force, that job that you had is now gone. That if you hurl racial epithets or you cuss out the passengers of BART, that your job is gone. So Noble is supposedly to make recommendations on how law enforcement officers should function. But I don't know what Noble knows. So I think Monday night in San Francisco and Tuesday evening, I believe, in Oakland at the BART headquarters, we need to make sure that they know that these officers are cussing people out with reckless abandon. See, some folk are just not equipped to be cussed out. Some of us don't have that kind of constitution. Cuss out is really violent. And if my space is invaded while you're cussing me out, then when I hit you, it was an act of self-defense. And I can argue that. So arrest me and let me argue for self-defense. In fact, Oscar and all of his friends that night, after being tossed around by BART officers, after being arrested for nothing, were all well within their rights to defend themselves. When Anthony Peroni jumped in Oscar's face, Oscar had a right to raise his hand in self-defense. There's no law that says, let them hit you with the club. You're standing there innocently asking, is there a problem, officer? and he pulls out and swings a club at you, you have a right. God gave you that right.
That's right. That's right.
Who's going to pull out a book of laws when there's a bat coming at you? Oh, let me, excuse me, let me see if that's in the Police Bill of Rights. Is it in the U.S. Constitution? You don't have time to figure that out. Somebody's swinging a baton at you, pointing a taser at you, pointing a weapon at you. At best, if they say, freeze, you're under arrest, at least there's been a dialogue. And I can respond to the dialogue. I surrender. What's the problem, officer? That's wisdom. But if an officer bum rushes the door with his weapon in his hand with a laser coming off the weapon, then that's war. That's not I surrender. You are intending to kill me. And according to the Constitution, if you can remember it, in that moment, you are entitled first to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Life comes first. So even though you wear the badge of law on your chest, remember always that if you are blessed with the authority of God's law in your hand, then you are duty bound by God to perform your duty responsibly. And if you do not perform that duty responsibly, then know that the ultimate punishment for your misdeed is with God himself. And you will not escape. It will haunt you. I think one of the bar officers that killed somebody killed himself a little while later. See, that's the haunting. He killed a young man in Haywood.
Yes.
They investigated. They didn't fire him. And that officer went home and lived with the fact that he killed somebody. I believe wasn't the man mentally incapable? The man had a mental disorder.
He was naked.
What's his name?
No, he was naked.
He was naked, so he had no weapons. Little Bobby Hutton was naked. Or near naked. When he was killed by Oakland PD as the first Panther to lose his life. He and Elbridge Cleaver, he was a little shy. Elbridge Cleaver said, take off your clothes. They're going to accuse us of having weapons. And Elbridge took off his clothes. Bobby was a little more shy. He may have taken off his shirt. And when they saw them, they filled Bobby Hutton full of holes. Well, wherever that officer or those officers are, if they still alive or are alive, they got to live with this weight. That's torment. And when you live a tormented life, they call it scripturally hell. Right? You can't get out of it. Mr. Mesley is in hell right now. You can't be comfortable with yourself knowing what's been done. They testified and he cried for hours on end as he should.
That's right.
But if he's truly repentant, then he would accept to pay the price for his wrong and stop trying to cover over that wrong. And Bart would do the same. They really ought to stop. They didn't want to just fire Peroni and Domenici and others, Whittenden, because that would be some level of admission. Which now means we have to answer to the Grant family's demand for wrongful death. So we're going to keep these officers. But to offer them a promotion and then send that message out to the world? What are they really saying to us? Are they saying we don't give 2 cents?
That's what they're saying.
For your thinking? That's exactly what they're saying. And so as we press forward, Monday and Tuesday, these two meetings of NOLA, On Wednesday, the Oversight Committee is meeting again. And as we're pressing forward, we're finding some level of agreement, because in truth, I think they've discovered it's better to agree with us than argue with us. So they're now looking at a system of oversight that does include an auditor, but gives the Citizen Review Board equal authority to the auditor. The auditor is one who is supposed to investigate the incident right away, bring the facts of the incident to the general manager and to the civilian board. When the civilian board and auditor find that a law enforcement officer has violated the code of conduct, then they will give to the police chief the method of discipline. The police chief has no choice in the matter. He will implement punishment for those officers. This was revolutionary because the police union is sitting there and they have never relinquished disciplining power to any entity outside of their own entities. So we're saying now, without the general manager, without the BART board, that if the auditor and the civilian group agrees that the officer that have shot someone, or the officer that have wounded someone, or the officer that have brutalized someone has done wrong, then chief, your assignment is to fire them. Chief, your assignment is to suspend them without pay. Chief, your assignment is to send them back to school for better training. But chief, you must implement this policy. Now, they put a check and balance in it. So if the chief disagrees, he can appeal to the general manager, to the BART board. Fine, chief, appeal. But you know, if this board disagrees with the general manager, we put this in here too. If the general manager says, keep the Dominicis and the Peronis on the police force, then we'll go above the general manager. The civilian board will then bring the case to the elected body called the BART Board of Directors. Now, what makes this significantly different is the BART Board of Directors are not financially interested, as Ms. Dougherty is. She's the general manager. She has a $300,000 salary. Trust me, she's concerned if BART has to pay a lawsuit to the Grant family or anybody else. Because for her, this is my pocket. This is my livelihood. This is my reputation. This is my authority. So when she renders a decision, she's paid out of that decision. Y'all with me now? That's Dorothy Duggar. So, of course, chief, you can appeal to Ms. Duggar. But if she agrees with you and not with us, then we take the case to the board. Now, the board is not paid much. For the most part, the board members perform that duty as a part-time politician. Like many small cities have council people. They're not 24-hour council people. They're council people a couple hours out of the week, because the city doesn't have the resources to pay in some smaller towns their council people $70,000, $80,000, $90,000 a year like you do around here in Oakland or San Francisco. In a smaller environment, those who work these boards allegedly do it because they love public service. So in the case of the BART board, it is allegedly their love for public service, maybe desire for a political future somewhere else, that causes persons to serve on the BART board. I know our sister, Carol Ward Allen, told me, you know, I'm retired. And I worked as a college professor. I've spoken to her classes at Lane College. She teaches, or was teaching, black studies. And in words, this is a lot of pressure on me. I'm retired. They don't pay me enough to have to respond to this. She didn't know what would happen to Oscar when she took the assignment. And now she sees the pressure. But she doesn't. In fact, she knows they're not paying me enough. But out of love for public service. That's really the kind of politician that you need. One that loves public service. Not one who's looking for a new position. Not one that's looking for this as a job. You need a public servant. Well, now she's there and others are there. So if the general manager says, no, we're going to stay with what the police chief says, then we take it to the elected board. And the difference is this. The elected board hires the general manager. If the general manager keeps tripping every time there's an allegation made against police, the elected board can fire the general manager. The elected board can override the general manager's decision. So, in a few weeks, I don't have that date yet. BART will have another one of its public processes. They'll set the little tables out, and they'll attempt to share. Now, when we started this dialogue, they fought it tooth and nail. But we threw it on the table. I think I left. And I came back, and they told me that they voted 6-1 in agreement with what we laid on the table for them. So we're thankful for the opportunity to serve, and we'll see where it goes. We'll see where it goes, because they're tricky. I don't trust them as far as I can spit. Let me say that. They're tricky, because there are other elements that come in. And that is, even to attempt this process, they're going to have to go to the state of California legislature and amend the BART Constitution. I don't know what they call it. The BART Charter. There has to be some slight amendment to the BART Charter, which means that Sacramento will have to agree. So now, I need to share with you that we were in Sacramento on last Monday. And by the way, we would not have been there with the impact that we brought were it not for your support of Caravan for Justice. When we went first with 500 people, second with 1,000 people, third with approaching 2,000 people, it got the attention of the legislature. And when we walked in for our meeting with what they call the Tri-Caucus. The Tri-Caucus are the legislative groups that are interested specifically in specialty issues. In this case, the Black Caucus, which is chaired by our Assemblyman Sandra Swanson, who facilitated the meeting, the Latino Caucus, and the Asian Pacific Islander Caucus. And because of the environmental issues that past and others know we've been wrestling with, we had a Caucasian Assemblyman from the Environmental Caucus that joined us. So we met with 9 assembly people that represented about 40 assembly people. Now, this is why they are in the heart of the budget struggles that they're going through. And not only did they carve out time to meet us, but they stayed overtime to stay with us. Because in truth, the budget problems that they're having is kind of like BART's budget problem. When Moses made that prayer and Pharaoh's wealth was frustrated, the whole state is suffering. Because this is the state that passed Proposition 21. I was in San Diego yesterday, and I was speaking to one of our brothers there about the town hall and the Caravan for Justice and our opposition to 3 strikes. He said, what about Prop 21? I said, brother, you got to refresh my memory. Do you all remember Prop 21? I shared it with you. Prop 21 was the law that was passed that said that your 14-year-old, if he or she were to commit a felony, would be tried as an adult. And having traveled to nearly every prison in Northern California, state prison, and a couple of federal, I can tell you what some of the inmates have told me. I'm talking about the lifers. They have said the worst thing that ever happened for prison violence was for them to let these 14, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds in the state penitentiary with us. He said, because they're victimized by the older inmates. And in their effort to protect their own lives, that some of these teenagers become more hardened killers. Because to keep a 30-year-old from killing you, you kill him. Now you went there with one or two strikes, and while incarcerated, find your third strike and end up the rest of your life in a prison industrial complex that is already overcrowded. Why did you go to Sacramento? I'm telling you why. And what we have in Southern California is the largest part of our electorate support group. So my brother said, what about Prop 21? I said, thank you. When we go back to Sacramento, Prop 21 is right on the table. It's right on the table. We go back to Moses and Aaron, let our people go. You spent so many billions of dollars in the prison industrial complex. In fact, the Tri-Caucus told us that the prison budget is the equal of the education budget. But see, that doesn't make any sense. If you invest in the beginning in these, then we don't have to invest in those. If we teach them properly from the beginning. See, the problem is they don't want our young people well educated. Because when you come out, you make a demand on government and on the industry. Where's my job? Where's my opportunity? Where's a life that's worth living that you have provided from your seat in government? And the answer is, they don't have it for you. They invested so much in prisons. The largest industry in the state has become prisons. They build shopping malls around prisons. You been to Vacaville lately? Mm-hmm. Fairfield? Mm-hmm. Why are all those malls up there? Do you really want to drive that far to get 10% off your Nikes? Why did they build that outlet mall out there? Solano. Because there's two state penitentiaries right around the corner. One of them, Solano State Penitentiary, houses 5,000 inmates. It was made to accommodate 2,500 inmates. We went in to visit the brothers. There's no more weights. That's gone. The gymnasium is a bedroom. So we walked past the gymnasium where brothers used to maybe play ball, volleyball, or something. You go in there now, there's bunk beds. Now, how violent would a room like this full of bunk beds of convicted men, how violent might that room become? How many of those men are raped right in that room? This happens. Now, HIV is spreading all over the prisons because they're stacking and packing men and women in the prisons in an unhealthy environment. I met a young man that they performed an experiment on him. He went in with a little stomach pain and they gave him some experimental medication, Esalama. By the time they were done with him, they had to remove organs by the fault of the prison system. That's why Judge Shelton Henderson now issuing federal orders. You're going to have to release from the state of California approximately 60,000 inmates because of the way they're being mistreated. A man came up dead on death row a few days ago. And they're still investigating how he didn't come up dead in the death chamber, but something happened to him in death row. California has the largest death row in the country. Did you all know that? Yes. This is why we went to Sacramento. Now, in the meantime, we're dealing with the way police oversight happens. You see, if BART does the right thing and produces a model for police oversight, the fear that police and prison unions have is this: that if the people can apply pressure to a police department, causing it to change its misdeeds, mishandling, and abuse of people, and structuring it with oversight. So if you got a cowboy on the force, you got a few who dance around how things ought to be done and are brought before a citizen board that can say to the chief, fire. See, police unions all over the state are going to oppose this. We guarantee you that. We saw that with AB 312. Every police officer in the state went to Sacramento, their unions, to oppose an oversight that they felt would set a precedent that would cause other jurisdictions to be impacted by the state imposing oversight at BART. So they said, BART, you figure it out. Because if we do it in the mandate of state law, then that manner and method may be imposed on Oakland, may be imposed on Berkeley, may be imposed on Richmond, Sacramento, San Diego, wherever. They did not want a state system to determine it. Well, sisters and brothers, the state's budgetary problem, she produced it herself. How much money did they borrow to build all them prisons?
Too much.
It built 20 prisons and one college. How much does it cost to build a prison? Now they want to sell San Quentin because it's highly desirable real estate. But they're figuring out that it may cost them too much to tear it down.
Wow.
Here, you got a 100-year-old prison. Now, if you ever go to San Quentin or Old Folsom, they have New Folsom, unfortunately. That was one of the new prisons. You got Old Soledad. And across the street is New Soledad. So you go to one side and it's brand new bricks. You'll go to the other side in his old dungeon. It's like that. They call it Salinas Valley State Penitentiary. That's New Soledad. Old Soledad is right up the street. By the way, you're just not too far from the Gilroy Shopping Complex. Y'all with me now? You know how well placed these things? They got the inmates, pardon me, the guards have to shop somewhere. Gotta buy new homes. So they build up communities. You got 8,000 inmates down there. So you gotta build a school for the guards' children. You gotta build a shopping center for the guards. So they build them up. So when you go into Vacaville, you got two prisons there. You go over here, you got two prisons there. They built up all up in Dublin. Why did they build all of the condos in Dublin? I went to Safeway in Dublin one day. I had never been in the store. And I'm looking around and said, these people are a little different. I told my wife, there's something different about the shoppers. And I said, ah, I know what it is. Santa Rita's up the street. Then up the street from Santa Rita is a women's federal penitentiary. And across the street from that, there's the men in the federal penitentiary. In other words, that whole area of condominiums is built up for the many employees of these three systems of incarcerating people. Now, the state has invested in all of these prisons and are now turning to poor people and saying to you that because we have to pay for what we borrow for all of this, that we're now going to cut the education budget. We're now going to cut out food stamps. We're now going to cut out services for the poor. So we were welcomed by these assembly people, and we learned something right away, that many times our elected officials don't know the magnitude a problem that we feel on the street. Because if you're in Sacramento every day and you're looking at budgets, it's on paper. Okay, let's cut this, finance that, amend this, change that. But how does that affect the day-to-day living of the poor? And sometimes our elected officials will sit in office, and if you really pay attention, if they don't have term limits, we'll have the same elected official from the black community until they decide to move on to something bigger. You know why that is? It's because we're not as involved as we should. And the result is whoever represents us, without being in real touch with the hood, makes decisions, and most people in the hood don't know what decision was made. Our brother, Willie Brown, he's probably kicking himself right now in that he did not call in the community to the alarm when three strikes came through. But he's a soulful man, so if he's kicking himself, that's a good thing. That's repentance kicking in. That self-accusing spirit now saying, I was in that position when three strikes were passed. And rather than rally up the community to go against it, I did the political thing. Y'all with me now? See, this happens if we allow those that we place in office to function without us. So Caravan for Justice was the first time they had ever seen us in the state capitol in California history. This has never been seen before. You hear about the great work of the Black Panther Party that went up with a couple of dozen brothers. And we applaud that. But when we brought a couple of thousand, y'all with me now? It had a whole nother impact. And we came to bring them the real issues. We know you got a budget problem, but be quite frank about it, you produced the budget problem. Now, let's show you how to fix it. Why don't you let our people go? The judge already told you let 60,000 go. In fact, maybe you can let a few more go than that. Did you know that 65% of those that got their third strike to spend the rest of their lives incarcerated did not commit a violent offense? 65% got their third strike shoplifted. 65% got their third strike snatching a purse out of a car. 65% got their third strike stealing a pizza from the Domino Man. That's an actual fact. So now they take this poor person. If you're stealing pizza, you got to be poor. You must be hungry. And it would be cheaper on the state to give you a food voucher than to send you to jail for stealing some pizza. Is that true? We learned a few weeks back that a young man in Alameda County caught his third strike. By the way, Mr. Orloff is one of the third strike givenest DAs in the state. Is that true? And death penalty givenest DAs in the state. They gave a young man his third strike for stealing a pack of cigarettes. That means he's got a bad habit. We all know smoking is not good for us, don't we? Even if we've got the habit, you know it's not good for you. And if you went out and stole a pack to feed that nicotine fit, well, no, you shouldn't steal cigarettes. But the judge should have sent him to a diversion program. We'll send you down there. You know, we don't smoke. We can teach you how to smoke in 30, how to stop smoking in 30 seconds. In fact, it wouldn't take 30 seconds. Y'all ready? Stop. Done. Stop. Pray. Stop. If you feel like smoking, pray again.
That's right.
Throw it away. Go in the cabinet and throw it away. Don't leave it right there in front of you. Get rid of it. Don't hang out in the park where everybody's smoking. Stay away from them. Pray, fast, and stop. We can do that, right? Just do it. Just say no. You can do that. And a judge, to give a man 25 to life for stealing a pack of cigarettes. Then I heard that the pack of cigarettes was valued at $8. They should have gave the tobacco company its first strike to charge anybody $8 to kill themselves in the first place. That's where a car should have been made. How much did you say that the pack was worth? Let me be the judge. Let me be a judge one day. Did you say, I'm sorry, attorneys, did you say that pack of cigarettes cost $8 from that weed that was growing, can grow naturally? Tobacco was a weed. Did you not? We're in West Oakland. If I say weed, I know what some of you might be thinking. But the tobacco leaf itself is a wild growing weed.
That's what it is.
It grows naturally. Someone determined to farm it. Unfortunately, they went and got black slaves and made us cultivate the earth for hundreds of years, which is why our pastor always reminds us of reparations. So that these tobacco companies could make the millions and millions and billions of dollars they earned. Those companies are hundreds of years old. Then they got insurance to protect their investment. They insured their slaves. And they insured their land. So now the wealthy insurance companies that made their money from farmers buying insurance on their equipment, the slaves.
So true.
So when the argument of reparations comes up, and pastors always going to make sure we know it. The countless numbers of our people that have been handled, mishandled, and abused by law enforcement. A family has more than a right to demand a bar $25 or $50 million. They know it's not just for them. They know it represents the victims of those who didn't have a videotape. It represents the victims of those who had police lying in testimony and there was no one there to contradict the lie. It represents the victims of those that could not find justice in the courts of the land. Maybe God put it in the hands of the grand family. That is not maybe, he did. Because now we make a call for justice. So the caravan for justice is now driving in all these issues. And what the state assembly people told us was, in essence, where have you all been all of our lives? Woo! We finally see a community to stand up for the issues that we, who are the minority group in the assembly. But in truth, did you know that we are not the minority group in the state? The state is actually 52% non-white. And that's for those that took the census. Now, if you figure out those who didn't take the census, the state is probably more like 60% non-white. What the assembly appreciated was, like Oscar and his friends, they were all together that night. You got Latino, you got Black, you got Pacific Islander, Filipino, you got this in the family. And the young men that gathered that night looked like the state. They look like the new majority in the state. And what makes your family different is that you're united. Now, when we went before the state assembly, this is what they told us. They had never, the Black caucus, the Latino caucus, the Asian caucus, had never been together to discuss the issues before. And the first issue we laid before them from our delegation was the murder of Oscar Grant. And it made them all realize that we all say we're all Oscar Grant, so are they. So for the first time, the Black caucus, the Latino caucus, the Asian Pacific Islander Caucus and the Environmental Caucus all sat down together and agreed, and all we got to do now is follow up. So I follow up as I close this. It's one, to make sure we drive the issues here in our area. Each hearing day for Johannes Messner, we should be there.
That's right.
I want to commend, I don't know if the Bay Area Revolutionary Group is here, and of course, One Fam, and Tony and others who have been out front, outside the courthouse every time there's a hearing. Let's applaud. They hate to see the call for justice. I watched a man walk. I hate you people. What do you people want? And whoever's on the mic said, good question. I'm glad you asked. We want justice and went on to teach. We got to keep the issue out front.
That's right.
The timing. Mr. Meatherly waived the right of a speedy trial, which is common in defense, because not only do they want more time to build up their lies or argument, but they also want the case to go out of public attention. And for some reason, in this trial, every trial date lands on some significant moment. Now, I don't know how that happens. Here, Meatherly goes in for Juneteenth. Are you all acquainted with Juneteenth? He was in on the 18th, but that's the day before Juneteenth. The day that the black slaves of Texas were told that they were free. Did you all know it was the same couple of days when that hearing hit?
Mm-hmm.
Then before that, it was Malcolm X's birthday. Did you all know that? You didn't know that? Now they set the next hearing. Check this one out. September the 11th. I don't know if this is, I don't know how they keep coming up with these dates. But it appears that every date that they arrive at for the Meatherly hearing hits something significant. They say, okay, well, we're going to actually start the trial on October the 13th. Well, that's not a specific date, but it's very close to the date of the Million Man March in Washington, which was October the 16th. And I don't know if the judge knows that when that date hits, we've taken it to be a special day every year. Sometimes we do something big here. Many times we travel to other parts of the country. So October the 16th, I think this year we're headed to Memphis to celebrate the anniversary of the Million Man March. October, where do y'all get these dates from? However, as these dates arrive, mark them on your calendars. Be present. Make your voices heard. Put it on your Facebook. I see my Facebook friend, Brother Reggie, is here from the Black Hour and Lady College Radio. You can give him a round of applause. He's on the front line. Keeping the word out. Tweet it. Right now, they're telling you what's happening in Iran, not because the U.S. press is there. They allegedly, and I don't trust what I see on CNN, let me tell you that.
Okay.
But they're saying that they're getting all their news from Iran, from cell phone cameras and Twitter. I'm not good at tweeting. I've been practicing at Facebook. Twitter got me confused altogether. So if you know how to tweet it out there, then you tweet it out there. Lies caught on videotape in Oakland trial for Johannes Meatherly. Make sure we keep this information on the front line. Lay out there important dates that are coming up so that everyone can effectively involve ourselves. Now, the recall, let me just let you know. We're watching the DA very closely. The DA has the position to demand that this trial remain in Alameda County. So we're going to hold these signatures right in our hand and watch what he does in court. Now, if he doesn't do right in court, we pull the trigger. Y'all with me now? I had an opportunity to ask him a question or two. Not Mr. Orloff, but the prosecutor. Are you going to defend this case that it remained in Alameda County? He said that he would. Good. Then let's see you do it. Because if the riders can remain in open, and the riders impacted more than 100 people, and who knows who was murdered in West Oakland by the setting up operations of rogue police officers who had an involvement in the dope trade. Y'all seen the movie Training Day? That stuff is real, it's not fake. It happens. They got officers in West Oakland that are so renowned on the street. Then after Operation Nutcracker, and we went out and hit on every door with pastor and councilperson Brooks and met everybody in West Oakland, residents were telling us, oh, you need to find out about Officer so-and-so. In fact, one of them was called Dirty Rob. He can't charge me with slander because I don't know his real name. So Officer Dirty Rob is highly known in West Oakland as to be the beat-up, set-em-up policeman in West Oakland. And all the young brothers in West Oakland know Dirty Rob. He's the one that takes them in the back alley and does to them what Anthony Peroni was attempting to do to Oscar and his friends and let them walk home with lumps on their head without a report. That's Dirty Rob. There are others. In fact, they gave me 2-3 names. That's why it's so utterly amazing when we go to BART and they say they got 12 complaints. And I tell them we've got 20 right at the town hall meeting, and they go, well, where'd that come from? It's because you've not set it up in your system that there's an adequate intake for complaints and efficient follow-up on those complaints. That's why we're now fighting them to bring an accountable system for law enforcement officers that go wrong. And so, family, I want to thank you all for getting us your attention. I'd like to hear some of your thoughts and concerns today as we, we got a few minutes. Pastor, you got a few minutes? Pastor, you want to help me at the end. So, is it about the bar issue?
No, I want to ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
You know, on the agenda, just like the agenda that you just spoke on today.
Yes, sir.
And all of the different things that you spoke on. And the thing that you're preparing to do going to Sacramento, you know, and the reason that we're going there, you know, and I'm just, you know, I still, if we had an agenda of these things, you know, a list, you know what I mean, of these things that's taking place and the thing that you're planning,
yes.
You know what I mean? I feel we can work to get more people in from the unions and things of that nature there, you know?
We're just about at that point as we made our way for the last dialogue with the State Assembly. We did bring the paper, the principal points. And so, God willing, by next Saturday, we'll bring them here and we'll post them to the Caravan for Justice website so that those of the internet fast can get it right there. We will attach them to the email. How many of you get the emails announcements? Oh, that's a good thing. So we'll use every vehicle possible to reach our constituency with all that information. So there's about a 2.5 page document now that lists the issues that we brought to the State Assembly, and what we'll do is make sure we'll send it to We Can Get It Done at gmail.com as well, so that everybody has what the working issues are that Caravan for Justice and the 9 town hall meetings are addressing. The town halls like this, you should know, are being hosted in San Francisco, East Palo Alto, Oakland, Richmond, Antioch. Oh, who am I missing? I'm missing 4. Stockton, Sacramento, Modesto. There's one short, I think. Bakersfield is coming soon.
though we did have a missing one, though we did have a delegation from Baker's, all Pittsburgh, California is now on board with us in these regular town hall meetings. What you are, sisters and brothers, is a movement. There has not been an organized motion of the community to say to the state or local government for decades, thus saith the community. So now that the issues have brought us to the point that we can't sit back and watch injustice be done any longer, we're at a time where justice must be served in open. Of course, the murder of our brother Oscar is on the front burner issue to make sure that BART does right, that OPD does right, and that all of those in law enforcement do the right thing in the way of handling the people. Death penalty issue is coming up at the end of the month. On the 30th of June, do you have the time? From 9 o'clock to 3 o'clock up the street from the state capitol, we'll email out the logistics of the address, because we want to take a strong delegation that opposes the death penalty, along with part of our community council that is strong advocates against the death penalty. We're natural allies.
That's right.
We're natural allies, and we should express that in our political force. Yes, sir.
I just got a text from Jack, who's at a socialist conference in Chicago, 900 people there. He said, tell people I'm spreading the word about Oscar from New York to Brazil, Washington, D.C., even Australia. And he also talked to...
That's where people are from.
That's right. That's where people are from, and they're all at this conference. He talked to Amy Goodman, who is a name maybe some people are familiar with. She wants to come talk to the family about the case with her radio show, Democracy Now. Jeremy Scahill, who's maybe not as well known, but also in that same kind of region of reporting. And the final thing is that we have some new budget data. So I'll start with the family, and then if there's any left, you can get them after the front row.
Thank you very much. Amy Goodman. See, they would like for this issue to go away, but Amy Goodman has an international profile.
That's right.
On PBS. Networks, as well as on the internet. I know democracynow.org is where you can get good interviews of factual information going on around the country.
And she and David D will be speaking at the Socialist Conference on July 4th weekend here in San Francisco.
Oh, really?
So if you want to find out more about that, please just let me know.
Good, good. Thank you very much, Brother Cannon. Yes,
is there a date scheduled for the next caravan?
The date is not yet certain, but we're looking at the last week of July. We want to take the time to gather up 40 busloads of our people, of supporters. The movement is now taking note in Southern California, but we understand very clearly that to get here from L.A. or San Diego, that's an all-day drive. So the burden of organizing and mobilizing on behalf of the whole of the people that suffer is really on us in Northern California. So if we can get to Sacramento in a few minutes, then we are going to take the vanguard position to be face and voice. While there are many great organizers, and we're connecting with them now, most of the Three Strikes opponents are organizing in Southern California. Most of the Prop 21 opponents are organizing in Southern California. Most of the gang injunction opponents are organizing in Southern California. What we bring is the natural activism and revolutionary zeal of Northern California. But this is where the Panthers were born, is that right? This is where the sleeping car quarters got the beginning. The first black union in the country started right here in the city of Oakland. So the Dellums family goes way back in those organizing efforts and many others. And so we're in the right place. This is the right time to make government do the right thing. Because if it doesn't do the right thing, she'll just belly up. She'll belly up broke. And that will be the torment she's brought on herself for decade after decade of unjust laws. And there's nothing that they will be able to do to stop it. And I want to stop. I've talked more than long enough. I don't know if Brother Bobby or Sister Wanda or Diane, would you all like to share any thoughts or regards with us? Please receive our brother, Uncle Bobby.